Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm! Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comment. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my veil, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Greetings and salutations, everyone. We have a lot to talk about. The NFL is back in the news with another tragic event. And I'm sorry to report another death is involved, in case you haven't heard. Also, we'll talk about Cory Booker, Hillary Clinton, Cat Williams, and much, much more. So let's get started. Now, after last weekend's violent and sad incident involving Javon Belcher, the NFL took another hit on Saturday when Dallas Cowboys' Jerry Brown died in a car accident. The New York Daily News reports that Brown's teammate, Josh Brent, was behind the wheel. Police said Brent, who was 24, was speeding down the Irvin, Texas road when his car struck a curb, causing the vehicle to flip at least once before coming to rest on a center median. Brown, 25, a practice squad linebacker, was found unresponsive at the scene. Emergency workers took him to a local hospital, but he couldn't be saved. Police conducted a field sobriety test on Brent at the scene of the accident and arrested him when he appeared to be intoxicated. The charges against Brent were upgraded after Brown died. Now, of course, last week, you remember that Javon Belcher allegedly shot his fiance and then turned the weapon on himself, tragically killing the mother of his child as well as himself. And this week we now have a allegedly drunk incident where the Cowboys were involved and one of the players died. This is 2 weeks in a row that we have these tragic events happening with NFL stars. What are your opinion about this? I want to hear from you. What do you think is going on with the NFL? Now, last week I talked about brain injuries and how the impact of these brains, impact of these hits are causing these players to make certain decisions. But is this in fact the case, or is this just reckless behavior of guys with a lot of money? I really want you to weigh in on this. These guys, young men, I should say, have all this money. They're going around and shooting them their fiancés, killing themselves, acting in reckless, you know, having reckless behavior, going out drinking and driving. Now, I was just talking about this the other day and saying that if I was making $500,000 a year, $1 million a year, wouldn't it be feasible for me to go out and get a driver, and the driver could take me around? I'm just going to a club. I can have a few beverages and just have a good time without the worries of drinking and driving and the police and everybody else. But yet, they go out and do things of this nature. Again, if you haven't heard, just this weekend, a couple of days ago, Dallas Cowboys, Jerry Brown died in a car accident. Now, the New York Daily reports that Brown's teammate, Josh Brent, was intoxicated behind the wheel, allegedly, when this incident happened. And, of course, Brown dying, the charges against Brent were upgraded, and he's now on a $500,000 bond. So the second question I want to pose to you is, first question is this reckless behavior, or is this more or less caused by the hits that the NFL keep taking, these guys keep taking? And secondly, is this $500,000 bond too low, or is it too high? I need you to weigh in. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Also, we're going to talk about Booker, Cory Booker. That's right. New Jersey Mayor Cory Booker is living on a supplemental nutrition assistance, what we call food stamps. And he's living on a $30 a week budget, which amounts to about $4.23 a day. Now, of course, this is news because, you know, people of that stature are unaware of what it really costs to struggle when you're poor. You know, and I wonder, the listening audience out there, do you believe this is a publicity stunt, or is he really trying to find out what's going on with poor people? You know, what's going to be the aftermath? What's his intent by going out living on this $30 budget? I mean, I hear this all the time. People want to go out and live in this case, but it's only temporarily that they do this, you know, because they know they can go back to their big houses on the hill. Or, you know, they can, you know, periodically get, you know, get their drivers or their maids or, you know, other people to bring them some underneath the rug. This is not a permanent situation. This is temporary. So it seems like to me that the mindset would be a little bit different when you're in a temporary situation, which you know you have total control over, where this is a permanent situation. Now, if you haven't heard, let me tell you a little backstory about what Booker is doing. Now, according to his blog, he tweets about this every day, chronicling the effort he's struggling. But, of course, that was an idea behind the challenge. Booker decided to eat only the food he could afford on the equivalent of the allowance provided to participants in the program, formerly known as food stamps, for 7 days. To better understand how SNAP assistance works and to raise awareness about food insecurity, the mayor, who has been eating mostly vegetables in various combinations, his first meal was lettuce and chickpeas, and things don't improve much thereafter, and has complained of experiencing hunger pains. Like there's something foreign to him, huh? Experiencing hunger pains. Says he could have planned and his shopping better. The second day of this SNAP challenge, he ate salad for breakfast and a can of peas and corn mix. Now, what strikes me as interesting is that, you know, I'm familiar with this type of budget, and I don't eat like that. Oh, I didn't eat like that. You know, we actually, you know, chose our nutrition wisely. Now, granted, you know, we had to get the cheap stuff, the cheap bread, the cheap chicken, the cheap, you know, the canned goods and all that stuff. But he's trying to say that he can eat healthy, because everything he mentioned was vegetables and peas and things of that nature. So I wonder what you think. What's his message? What is he trying to accomplish during this week of being on food stamps? Why not a month? Why not a year? If he really wants to feel what people are going through on this particular in this particular environment, you know, they call it supplemental nutrition assistance program when he's on it, but they call it food stamps when I'm on it.
But at any rate, let me get you to weigh in on this. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I also want to talk about Cat Williams. Has he just lost his mind? He is going through some real issues right now. And we're going to take a quick break. But when we return, we're going to talk a little bit about all of these issues, to include Hillary Clinton for 2016. What do you think is going on with that? I got a soundbite from Newt Gingrich. You're not going to believe your ears. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Boom.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And of course, I have a chat room open on blogtalkradio.com/current events. And you can also tweet me or Jima. You can tweet Jima at AskJima. That's at AskJema. Now, first up, I want to talk a little bit about the incidents of the NFL. And joining me live in the studio is Jima, the executive producer of Current Events, and also the chief operating officer of TaylorMade Training and Consulting. I introduce to some and present to others no other than Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So last week we talked about Belcher and the unfortunate incidents associated with his fiance, if you will, and his girlfriend, I guess it's officially called, and the fact that he turned the weapon on himself, allegedly kind of a homicide-suicide scenario. He went out to the field, Kansas City Chiefs, and he kind of gave his appreciation to all the things to his coaches that they have done for him, and turned the weapon on himself, and bam. Now we have an incident where these two football players go out and, you know, unfortunately are in an incident where one dies and the other goes to jail. What is going on with these NFL players?
Well, unfortunately, it's not as though this is brand new information. The athletes, since the beginning of their notoriety, have all been out at the club doing what they do. In your opening, you talked about, you know, the need for them to have a driver and whatnot. And a piece of that is true, but, you know, there's this thing we used to call back in the day called parking lot pimping, and you can't parking lot pimp with a driver. You know, you got to show off your Bentley, you got to show off your Benz, you got to show off your Beamer, your Range Rover, whatever you're rolling in, because it's parked up front, because it's been valeted. So, you know, that's what it's all about. And so they think about right now how they get to the club. They don't really think about how they're coming home from the club. So, you know, it's just a part of what happens. And unfortunately, it's just not in the NFL. It's in all professional sports. Some are just highlighted more than others. And it's in college sports. And some of this stuff is even in high school. You have kids out who ain't of legal age, and they drinking and driving and causing wrecks and accidents and killing people. And you're getting records that get, you know, pushed under the table because they're a high-profile athlete. So they take that with them to college, and then they do something stupid in college. And they're a high-profile athlete. So they don't get the hard charge. They get a community service or a fine or something. Then they go to the NFL and boom, you know. So at no point when they have made bad decisions have they ever been truly held accountable for it. There's always been somebody there to cover it up for them, or somebody there to kind of make it go away, or where they don't feel the hard knock life of it all. So, you know, it's unfortunate, but that's the reality. For some reason, we've made it be okay if you can throw a ball or catch a ball or run real fast or hit a ball out the park. You know, we've covered up some things. And so that's pretty much how they live their lives now.
That's an interesting concept. It sounds like to me that these young men or women, if they're engaged in this type of activity, are seen as an asset. And they want to protect their assets because they're making 10, 15, 20 times what they earn, what the players earn. So they cover these things up. And the fact that, you know, when something tragic happens like this, that person takes the fall. Well, it seems to me if that is truly the case, then the culpability should rise more or further up the ladder than just the individual then.
Of course it should, but it doesn't. I mean, that's just like when something happens in college, very seldom is a coach held accountable to the activity of his players. The players can get suspended, can lose their scholarships, get kicked off the team for behaviors, you know, not warranted of a football team, of a member. But don't that happen to the coach? He's still making his $5 million a year, and yet he's the one that's in charge of all that. Somebody on that coaching staff is in charge of those players. So, but nothing ever happens to them. And nothing ever happens to the agents of the players once they get in the league. Nothing happens to the owners of these clubs that, you know, I mean, I bet if somebody was to do a study and look at, you know, which NFL teams or NBA teams seem to have more issues, more publicized issues around violence and guns and weapons and jail time and all these sorts of things. And you would think at some point that owner of that club would have some responsibility to that. But he doesn't, because he says they're grown men, they're going to do what they want to do. So nobody holds anybody accountable.
I like that.
Because they don't really care, because they're just making money. They don't really care if you can read, write. If you know how to add up your money, if you got a drinking problem, or they don't care about none of your mental health issues, because all they want you to do is go out there and perform, beat the point spread, so they can make some more money. That's really all it comes down to.
Well, you know, you mentioned if someone takes a look in the history of these events, which there's a plethora of evidence to suggest that this happens, and this hasn't been happening for many, many, many years. And you also said that there's no culpability by the agents, the owners, the coaches, or anybody else involved other than the individual. Then I must ask a follow-up question. Then why is it that the players allow themselves to be used in this fashion? Why do they say, I'm going to take the fall for this organization when I go out there and act up in this manner? Why is it that they won't take a different approach to saying, hey, I'm going to limit some of these things I do because I know I'm going to take the fall if something happens?
And let's be clear. I mean, you know, for all practical purposes, it's more players in the leagues that are not in trouble, I think, than those that are because of the numbers, just by sheer numbers. And you've been a numbers guy. You may can agree with me on that. Just by the amount of players you have, there's probably, you know, the percentage in which we're talking about is not a large percentage, but it's large enough that we need to take a look at it because it keeps happening more frequently now. So that's the first thing I want to say. The second thing, to answer your question, you're dealing with a population of young men who primarily have the weight of the world on their shoulders, who, since they could walk fast enough and run fast enough, has been told, we need you to make it so we can all do better. And if you are the middle child of, say, 8 kids in your family, so you got the ones above you, and then you have the ones underneath you, all depending on you to be the one to make it. Not to mention your parents, your grandparents, and anybody else that's remotely related to you. So you have that burden of being the one to carry it for everybody. Whether that's really what you want to do or not, you might like football, but you might not be in love with football, but you might be the one with the gift for football. So you've got to harness that thing and ride it until you can't ride it anymore because everybody is dependent upon you. Now, let's say you end up with a child right out of high school. You know, you made it through high school, and you end up with a child. So now not only are your siblings depending on you, now you have, if you're not serious with the woman, now you have the mother of your child depending on you as well as your child. So all of that is why you go out and you sign the contract, you make the deal, you go into these bad investments. You know, you end up broke 9 times out of 10 because you didn't handle your money. But in the moment that you sign that first deal, everything about you depends on that because your identity has been you are the one that's going to take us out of this situation we're in. If it's poverty, if it's, you know, we don't have enough, and poverty comes in many different ways. So if you carry that burden, then falling on the floor for your owner or your coach isn't that big of a deal because you've been falling on the floor anyway for your family. So it's just the role that you've taken or the role you've been given, and then now it's the role that you're playing.
You know, it's interesting to see to hear you say that they have all this responsibility. It seems to me then they should be try to be more responsible then and to behave appropriately if they have the weight of all of this on their shoulders. I mean, wouldn't it be the case that, you know, I know these people are counting on me. I don't want to let them down. I wouldn't go out there and do something stupid.
But see, you don't think it's stupid because nobody ever hears about it. So it's not stupid because it's not in the newspaper, because somebody already hid it from the public. You understand what I'm saying? So you haven't had any public shame behind it because it's been covered up already. So that's why you go through college. By the time you get to college, who knows what you did in high school? But by the time you get to college, if something does happen and the NCAA finds out about it, therein is when you're going to find some issues. Because if the NCAA doesn't find out about it, your school may cover it up. And unless you got a reporter that's just nosediving trying to follow the team around, it may not ever come out. So you never have to take responsibility. And let's talk about that word responsibility and being responsible. You are taught to be responsible. So if my whole life, all you told me to do is I'm the one, you haven't really taught me about being responsible. You've taught me how to play a game. And right now, the only thing I know how to do is play a game. And that game is life. So I treat life like I treat football or basketball or baseball. I treat it like okay, if I do this, then this is what's going to happen. I never look at it any other way than it just being a game. And if I do something, somebody will take care of it because they always have.
Interesting. The other thing you said was that you talked about me being a numbers guy and the fact that, you know, if you look at, took a comprehensive look into the system, there's a small percentage. But I would only suggest that just this year alone, 2012, there are 32 NFL teams and there have been 37 arrests in this year. Josh Brent, which that we just talked about. Cowboys nose tackle was charged with intoxication manslaughter. DeMarcus Dobbs, 49ers defensive end, was arrested for suspicion of driving under the influence. Jonathan Amaya, the Dolphins defensive back, was charged with battery after allegedly choking a cab driver. And there are many, many, many others. But the point is that it seems to me that there's over one player per team on average that's getting in trouble. Not just this year alone. I haven't even mentioned Michael Turner for DUI, Chad Johnson for suspicion of a domestic violence. You remember that. Kenny Britt of the Tennessee Titans. Robert Quinn of the Rams, caught on a drunken driving charge. Dez Bryant, he was charged on July 16th with a misdemeanor family violence. So the list goes on and on and on about these NFL players. And I'm going to go back to what you said. They should be taught responsibility since they've been taught everything else.
That's right. But since they're not, then you and see all of it in every case you mentioned something where you were dealing with the symptom of an issue. We know that alcoholism is a symptom of something else. Violence and anger is a symptom of something else. So when they go out and drive the car after they've been drinking, and we know that this person drinks all the time, to chastise them about drinking would never get us to the root cause of why they're drinking. Because they'll tell you all day. So let's say he decides, I am going to get a driver. And he don't go out and drive anymore drunk. But he's still getting drunk every day. He's still got a drinking problem. The drinking problem doesn't stop because he stops driving.
That's true, but the impact that he has is only in himself. It can be isolated to himself. Of course,
maybe.
He can go out.
We don't know who's at home with him.
I agree. I'm just saying.
But listen to me, though. If the drinking is the symptom of the underlying issue,
I mean, that's a major.
Really, what's really going on, then you're not going to get to the real problem because who's ever at home with him will have to deal with whatever the other issue is.
But don't the person at home have a responsibility to help give him help too as well? I mean, if he's not home.
They could be just as sick as that other person. Come on now. People get with people for all kind of reasons, but, you know. I mean, if you was to see an old girl that was with Chad, you would have thought she somewhat had it together and wouldn't have put herself in that situation, only to find out later when looking at the story on with Oprah's Y'all and Vazant Fix My Life, you find out, my God, you had all kind of warning signs that this Negro was crazy, and you chose to get married to him anyway. Seriously? Which means you got some unresolved issues as well.
That sounds like an intervention needed across the NFL. And the majority of these charges that I'm talking about are DUI. Marshawn Lynch of the Seahawks, July 14th, DUI. Well, allegedly. Elvis Dumerville, Broncos defensive star was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. And Adrian Peterson on July 7th and charged with resisting arrest after an incident at the Houston nightclub. So, I mean, on and on and on of these incidents where alcohol, clubbing, or partying, or domestic, I mean, it's something going on in an NFL. Can't tell, and then this is interesting, when people talk about the money that they make. Well, obviously, and I said this last week, money can't buy you happiness, but it can buy you something close. What is going on with these people? I mean, obviously, it can't be a money thing, right?
Well, it could be a money thing. I mean, how many times have we seen somebody we thought living high off the hog, only, you know, in a couple of weeks we find out they got to file bankruptcy or they don't have no money? All their money's gone. I mean, you know, you can look at Vince Young was just, you know, riding high and then gets cut this season from Buffalo, and all of a sudden he ain't got no money. Well, how did that happen? So we don't really know. I mean, they live the lifestyle, but do they really have the means to support that lifestyle? And they may know that they don't, which might be why they out drinking and doing all the other craziness they're doing, because a lot of times when they at the club, you know, they ain't really paying for nothing. They come in on their name, the club owner or the bartender or the hostess of the party. They know who they are. So they send them rounds and stuff, you know, on the house because of who they are.
They bring
so,
in
because they right, they bringing in other people who spending their hard little earned money. So you trying to hang with the baller, and the baller ain't paying for nothing.
That's true. That's true. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I want to shift now to another issue. You kind of mentioned this a while ago about how these decisions are made and how people react to certain situations. And I want to shift to now Booker and the decisions he's making and how he's reacting to his situation, being that he is now spending a week off of what they are calling Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, what they used to call food stamps back in my day. And he's living off this $30 a week budget, and which amounts to about $4.23 a day. What, first, before I ask you a question, what do you think about this particular situation? I'll put it like that first.
Well, I think he's one of the few mayors that could get away with doing it simply because of how he has been as a politician. He lives in the community. The people know him. He's out shoveling snow. He's putting running in and burning houses and, you know, rescuing people from fires. And so, you know, he's walking up the same steps when the elevator's out in the building as everybody else. So he is one of the few mayors that could get away, I should say few politicians, that could get away with this because of how he is in his totality as a politician. So that's what I'll say first. And I think sometimes we tend to think we know more and we know what's better for people than people know for themselves. And we sit in these offices around these large tables with these nice high back chairs, and we come up with plans of programs for people who are less fortunate, and we very seldom have anybody at the table who is actually living that life. And so we come up with all these things that they need help with without even asking them, what is it that you need help with? And so I'm sorry.
I said, let the church say amen.
Oh, and so I think him taking the challenge of living off of the food stamps for a week, and yeah, it could be longer, it could be shorter, it could be, you know, whatever, but the fact that he's actually doing it speaks volumes to the type of person he is and the type of man he is. That's number one. Number two, you're dealing with someone who I think he's a vegan or vegetarian or something along those lines. So a lot of what we could just go buy and eat, he can't just go buy and eat. So he's already on some kind of restriction in terms of what he can get on the food stamps anyway. And so it is a greater challenge probably, you know, for him having gotten accustomed to a certain lifestyle, not just, you know, buying what you want to buy, but the fact that he's already on some what we would call a restricted diet because he don't eat meat and he don't eat dairy and he don't eat whatever he don't eat. But so, you know, it might be a little bit more challenging to find what he needs in the store using the food stamps. So, but I think the challenge and what he learns from it will be a lot greater than just sitting around the table discussing what we can do for the poor people.
You know, I'm going to have to say I definitely agree with your sentiment about sitting around a table, making decisions for people when you have the power, you have the money, see, you have control over the policy. And there's a history of that going to the United States for centuries, not just decades, but centuries. But I will want to challenge you on one thing. Now, more often than not, African-Americans understand the plight of poverty more than probably any other nationality in our society. And there are some people that they have just come into poverty over the recent decade or so, and they're experiencing a new level of poverty, which was unparalleled, unmatched to what we had to overcome. When I say we, African-American people had to overcome centuries ago, decades ago. So I believe that at least he understands from an impoverished standpoint what people of less means are going through. I would like to see his staff, the people outside of himself, being able to be a part of this challenge, so when the decisions are made, it's more than one person that understands this plight. You can now get a perspective that's more holistic than just a one-sided perspective by your boss. Because quite naturally, your boss can go out there and tell you, yep, I'm the mayor, yep, I should try to do this. But you need a collective body to pass policy. And for more than one person to be a part of this exercise, if you will, I think it would have more power in the long term. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, but I'd say yes, I could agree with that. But I would say that I'm giving him credit because he's actually doing something about it as opposed to just sitting around talking about it. And maybe after he's completed it, you know, those people that work with him might want to take the challenge on for themselves, and not because he's told them to, but because they themselves want to see what it's about. Because no one told him to do it. You know what I'm saying? He didn't get a call from Governor Christie and said, I want you to, you know, live on food stamps for a week. He felt that it was something on the inside of him that told him, you need to do this. So you will hope that as he's going through this journey, that the people around him are seeing it and are understanding the plight and might, just based off of his experience, begin to see things through a different lens. But I agree that there should always be more than one voice at a table. But I'm grateful and thankful that he saw fit to take the challenge and to do it, and to try to stick with it. I mean, I don't know if I could live off of $30 a week. I don't know. I can't answer that. I mean, there's times now, I mean, you know, we have, by the grace of God, been a little bit removed from that environment for a while now, at least 20 years. And so if you were to take me from the comforts that I have right now and put me back to where I was growing up in Helena, Arkansas, I would have a breakdown. I mean, seriously, I'm just going to keep it 100. You're talking about no air condition.
Yeah, but just about.
You're talking about, let me finish. You're talking about no air condition. You're talking about no tub. We run water in a big tin tub and three or four others in the tub at the same time. You're talking about an outhouse down the street from my grandma's house. Seriously? So when I'm
kick in. I mean, you survival skills will kick in. You'll get into a point where, yeah.
Not right away, though. I ain't going to give myself too much credit, Patrick, because I'm not. Because when I go home, my mama's air is out. I be having, like, I can't be standing here. She ain't got no air. Come on. Let's keep it 100. I'm going to keep my 100. No inside washing machine and dryer. What? And I'm going to tell you something, and this is going to sound extremely whatever of me, but it's just who I am. You know, growing up down south, we didn't have that. You know, we used the old-fashioned washing machine where you run the clothes through there, and then you hung the clothes out on the line. So I know about that. I ain't got to go back to that. I lived that already. Even at 44, I've done that. So when we left Arkansas and moved to Kansas City, there were certain things we had. We always had air, thanks to my daddy, because that's where we put us at. And we had an inside washing dryer. We ain't never had to go to the laundromat. So I didn't understand that, going to the laundromat thing. So I was in college. I couldn't understand, well, what do you mean? It's not, I had to go find, I didn't know what that meant. So for you now, after 20 years of living like I've lived for the last 20 years, with all the luxuries that one could imagine, and then you want to take me back to Quindaro, Kansas, and live like that, I would have a conniption. I'd make it, but boy, them first couple of days, I'd be down on my luck. I'd be crying, I'd be snotting, I'd be having all kind of issues. But like you say, survivor technique would kick in, but at first I would be mad. I'm just going to keep it real. I would be upset and angry if I had to go back. Because the Lord didn't intend for us to go back. He always said to go forward. So if I'm supposed to go forward, then if whatever I'm doing, I need to make sure I can maintain myself to go forward and not go back. Because I don't want to turn into a pillar of salt like Lot's wife.
You're listening to Current Events, Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to take a short break and more on Quindaro when we return.
You are listening to Kind of Rhythm with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, Tailor Made Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, Tailor Made's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East Bloomfield.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We also have a chat room open. Just go to blogtalkradio.com/current events and click on the chat button, or you can also look us up on Facebook or Twitter. And so, Jima, let's get back to Cory Booker for a minute. Now, he's done a lot of great things, and I agree with you. I mean, I think this could be commendable. But I wonder at the end of the day, and I have to ask this question. If it is the case, now what's the governor name of New Jersey, New York, Newark? The governor's name is, his name is, it is
Chris Christie.
There you go. So let's say hypothetically that Chris Christie becomes president of the United States. So that means that the governorship is open. The gubernatorship would be open. Who's likely to take that position?
Well, we don't have to wait for him to become president because he has to run again anyway next year. And yeah. Not 2013, but 2014. And there's rumor out there right now that Cory Booker is considering either running against Chris Christie or running for a Senate seat. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Chris Christie isn't safe to make it. To be reelected in 2014 and then go on and be elected in 2016 or at least be the Republican nominee. So he definitely has to take care of New Jersey right now. He can't be looking to the White House because Booker would be the best one to probably run against him because he is well known across the state. Everybody knows Newark's mayor. Everybody know him across the country.
Yeah, that's
so,
true. He does have
yeah.
names. But I think he has some vulnerabilities, though, if he run against GOP.
What?
Cory Booker.
Yeah, well, what's his vulnerability?
He has some vulnerabilities. I'm not going to mention them now. I'm going to verify them. But I think he has some vulnerabilities, especially when it comes to
especially when it comes to what?
Running against the GOP, you know, they got a machine, man, a research machine out there will pull some stuff out of the left, out of the yin yang to get you. And so I think if he goes against Chris Christie, he may be in trouble. But if he doesn't, Chris Christie goes on to try to get out of the governorship and then try to go to the presidency open. I think he'll be safe. But if he runs,
but you got to remember now, let's not play like the GOP is all that in love with Chris Christie right now either. So, I mean, you know,
yeah.
I mean, they'll take him, but,
hungry,
you know, he's ruffled some feathers, too.
Yeah, but they want them strongholds in those states. They want those states' rights, strongholds. You know, that's why they got over 30 governors of Republicans right now. They don't want to let that go.
Right, but some of that isn't just right. I hear what you're saying, but in this last term, a lot of what, some of the things that they were able to do in 2010, they're not going to be able to do in 2014 because people are paying attention.
Yeah, they are paying attention.
So, yeah, people paying attention. So they're going to have to run, you know, a 30 or 40 state campaign for every seat.
For every seat.
And that for every seat, whether that's a governorship, whether that's a Senate seat, a U.S. seat or a representative or even some state senate seats. I mean, now you're talking about like what's going on in Ohio. They trying to get Nina Turner to run for Secretary of State. Well, I don't think the GOP ever thought they'd have to put money into a Secretary of State election.
Yeah, that's what
they're but they just might. You know what I'm saying? So they're going to have to be a little bit more strategic on where they put their money at.
Yeah. So I want. I mean, I think he has a really good chance of becoming the governor. Only if Chris Christie doesn't run and he don't have to go against that machine. Because I think right now, you know, quiet as it's kept. They, you know, they like Chris Christie and they want to keep him in office.
Mm-hmm, yeah. I agree with that.
So I want to shift now to your boy, Cat Williams. Now, Seattle Police said Williams was at the World Sports Grill near 9th Avenue North and Westlake Avenue North at about 2:30 p.m. when he allegedly exchanged word with other patrons, brandished a pool cue on the bar's manager, and refused to leave. Police also alleged that Williams allowed a family out of the bar, flicked a cigarette through the window of the family's car and threw a rock at the vehicle. The cigarette of the family member just below her eye, police said. William was booked into the King County Jail for investigation of assault, harassment, and obstruction. Police said he struggled with officers as they arrested him. And this, of course, according to The Root and TMZ report. So what's going on with Cat Williams? I mean, this is like the last several weeks in a row. It's something in the atmosphere with Kat. Is he something?
So when did this happen with Seattle? When did this happen?
This happened the other day.
Has he just been arrested again today for something? I didn't get a chance to get all the particulars, but he just got arrested again today for something. What's going on with Kat? He needs an intervention. He needs a 12-step program, and he needs to just say no to everything.
Happened last week. And so, I mean, early last week, that's when this happened. And so you said he got...
They just issued a warrant for his arrest today for something. So, yeah, look that up. I put out a tweet a couple of days ago to Steve Harvey, and I said, your boy Kat need an intervention. I said, he need all of y'all. I put on there DL, I put City the Entertainer, I put Martin, Eddie, Jamie Foxx, Chris Rock. I put all the heavy hitters on there that I thought could go and get the brother and just sit him down and say, dude, you know, this ain't right. And then the fact that the person bailing you out of jail is Suge Knight, that ain't going to end right.
Yeah.
I mean, really. Seriously, you want to be associated with Suge Knight at this time in your life? And he was supposed to do a show, I want to say, in Houston Friday night. And didn't show, and the people didn't know he wasn't coming. And then he was supposed to do a show last night in New Orleans, and I doubt if he made that one as well. So whatever got a hold of him really got a hold of him. I'm not sure, you know, it's some good stuff, whatever it is, but it is some good stuff, and it has completely knocked him off. So, you know. It can't just be weed. I'm not, you know, I ain't never seen just weed take you all the way over there. So, you think back to Richard Pryor and the cocaine and the heroin, and that's what they saying he on, is they saying he on that heroin. So, I don't know. I just know Kat was funny, and then he crazy now. That's all I know. He went from being a funny dude to being crazy.
Just talked about the flipping the cigarette and hitting the guy with the pool cue, throwing the rocks at the car. He also walked into Target and slapped the dude.
Yeah.
He just walked from there. You can see that. Just go out to TMZ and just type in Kat Williams slaps Target employee in the face. I mean, it got the video. So
right. But see, that was after the low speed chase on the moped or whatever he was on, where he was riding, but police was chasing him. On the bicycle, bike, I don't know. They chasing him on his bike, and then they call off the chase because now he riding all up on sidewalks and stuff. And they were saying it was just too dangerous for them to continue to pursue him. So they stopped pursuing him. And then stopping pursuing him is when he go to Target and get into it with the Target person.
Just slap him for nothing.
Who does that? What is right? I mean, one has to ask, what is wrong with him? That, I mean, he got kids, and didn't he take in, like, somebody else's kids? He had, like, six kids or something he adopted or something. I'm confused as to, you know, why no one in the circle has told him to go somewhere and sit down. We're done. You need to go get some help. Why no one has done that for him?
Oh, he think he can get away with just walking up to people, slapping them and hitting them and throwing rocks and stuff like that. I mean, you know, how long he think he can really get away with doing that for somebody to really take it to him? I mean, especially
somebody
when you
gonna kill. Well, see, the problem is somebody gonna end up killing Kat, but then that person gonna end up going to jail for life because they killed him.
Right. But he has his history of violence though, and he's a black man, so life, you know, is kind of discounted. You get life at a discount rate when you're black, seems like, in a lot of cases. So I wonder, in the act in this manner. You know, what the next 90 days look like for Kat Williams, he keep doing this.
I don't know if Kat going to make it 90 days. I can't even go that far out. With him, you need a, we used to call these, and when I worked in the facilities, we would call these emergency treatment plan that we check every 3 days. Every 3 days we would meet and discuss issues with a kid that was in crisis. And we do stuff on a daily basis because that's how chaotic their life was at that point. We can't come up with a 90-day plan for Kat because his issues are just out of control right now. It has to be something short-term that we at least try to get him under control. That's all you can do right now is manage him. You can't treat him for nothing. All you got to do now is try to manage him and get him safe, where he's safe for to himself and he's not going to hurt anybody else. That's all you can do right now. And how do you do that? You're going to have to lock him up somewhere. Now, the problem is you lock him up in jail, they need to make sure that he's monitored, because after he comes down off of whatever that is that got him, he's going to be suicidal.
Mm.
So, that you know, wherever he ends up doing his little time, even if it's, you know, because at some point bail is going to be denied. At some point, Suge Knight is not going to be able to go bond him out or bail him out. And that's when we need to worry. That's when I need to make sure that when he comes down, because he's going to crash and he's going to burn, and they have him in the infirmary, that they are giving him what he needs and they are observing him so that he does not then, you know, become a danger to himself.
Speaking of comedian, what do you think about Jamie Foxx on SNL last night?
You know, there were some high points in there. There were some low points. There were some points I thought, once again, to set us back 20 years. But I think in its totality, I would give it a B, you know, a solid B. You know, it wasn't, you know, there were some things that were A performance, but in its totality, it was probably a B. And I don't know, because I'm getting older, I'm a little bit more conscious, I got a child now. But some stuff that probably was funny to me 10, 15 years ago wasn't funny to me last night.
I think the cussing could have been left out of it. I mean, it was just too much, especially the game show part.
I didn't get it. I mean, I didn't get it. But like I said, I could just be getting older, because I don't cuss like that. To somebody that cusses like that, they probably thought it was funny. And they, you know, I would really say something, but I don't want to say that. So, you know.
So,
And I can't say the last time I actually sat and watched Saturday Night Live anyway. I mean, that was probably like the first in 20 years in itself that I actually sat and watched a whole show. I've never watched a whole show of Saturday Night Live, I know, in the last 20 years. I'm for sure of it.
Yeah.
So this might be normal. So, what I'm looking for or thought the show had become might not have been that. I may have had some false idea of what Saturday Night Live was.
it's wild to take a look at Saturday Night Live. I have to agree. What do you think about his opening monologue, though? I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, I thought the opening monologue was funny. That was a high point. That was an A plus. The opening monologue. You know, what was it? What is black? Or how black is that? Is that what it was? How black is that? I thought that was funny. I thought the the reference to the president and the first 4 years was about his white half, and then the second 4 years is going to be about the black half. I thought that was funny, which is, you know, funny, but not funny, because they already think that anyway, they as in Fox News. It was some funny parts in there. The whole Christmas tree pimp thing, that was a little edgy for me. You know, I was like, so I don't know. I'd say a solid B. I mean, it could have been better, but I've seen worse, so that's why I'm going to give them a solid B.
Yeah. So we're coming up on the top of the hour now. We're going to take a break here shortly. But before we go to the break, I want to tell you that coming up in the next hour, we're going to be talking about the fiscal cliff. Of course, the Hillary Clinton and 16. What do you think the implications of her running? And also, we're going to be talking about the new marijuana laws across the state and how they're affecting colleges, university, employment, the conflict between state law and federal law. All that's going to be coming up in the next half hour or next hour. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Jimmy, before we go to the break, I want to ask you about one other entertainment issue. What do you think is going on with Scandal? Oh, my goodness.
I thought you were going to wait to the end, but I'll take it now. I do not know what. I can't believe Huck did it. I just don't believe Huck did it. I think Huck was in the room. I think he's cleaning up behind somebody. That's what I'm hoping, because I just cannot see Huck just changing and going off the deep end. But he got some really bad demons in his life, you know. But I'm also thinking about that other guy from the week before, Charlie, I think was his name, the when all the spies was there together, and then Charlie called somebody and said, I'm back in town, you know, then he worked for me, or I'm ready to do some work or something like that. So I'm wondering who was he talking to on the other line, because we know Hollis, the oil guy with the voting machine stuff, we know he is crooked as the day is long and can't be trusted. So I just don't know. I'm an avid fan of 24 and anything that gives me suspense, but I definitely did not think that it would have been the president that would have got shot. I mean, just like I was shocked on 24 back in the day when they shot the president, and then, you know, I was just as shocked on this one because I did not see it coming. Now, I am concerned. I think the wife, Millie, I ain't really feeling Millie right now. She seemed a little suspect to me, too. So I don't know. It's a lot going on. But I am looking forward to tonight where they'll be on the Oprah Winfrey's next chapter at 8 o'clock Central Time, I believe, on the OWN Network. And Oprah will be talking with Kerry Washington, Shonda Rhimes, who is a creative, which is the director and producer of the show, as well as Judy Smith, who is the inspiration behind Olivia Pope. So that should be a powerful episode to watch with these wonderful, powerful, beautiful black women. And I'm excited because I get to see me on TV tonight. So I am excited.
That is a powerhouse crew, to include Oprah in that powerhouse crew. I mean, that's going to be an amazing feat to watch. When is that coming on again?
That comes on tonight on the Oprah Winfrey Network at 8 o'clock Central, I believe.
Awesome. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to be talking about the fiscal cliff, Hillary Clinton's run in 2016, and the marijuana laws, how they affect college, universities, and, of course, the conflict with the federal law. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gina, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Patrick Cook. From NPR News in Washington, I'm Barbara Klein. President Obama and House Speaker John Boehner held an unannounced meeting at the White House today to avoid massive tax hikes and spending cuts and find a way to do it. The Sunday talk shows brought some signs that compromise is possible. Former Republican Senator Alan Simpson tells CBS's Face the Nation tax cuts for the wealthy will end.
If anybody out there who's, quote, rich, doesn't think their taxes go up, the drinks are on me.
And Republican Senator Bob Corker said today his GOP colleagues would likely agree to higher tax rates on the rich if costly government entitlement programs are overhauled. Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi's decision to rescind the sweeping powers he gave himself more than 2 weeks ago is not placating Egypt's opposition leaders. They want the president to cancel this week's referendum on a proposed constitution that was drafted by Egypt's Islamist-dominated assembly. Amid protests, Morsi has ordered the military to maintain security until after the referendum. Israel is responding to yesterday's fiery speech by Hamas leader Khalid Mashal in Gaza. As Linda Gradstein reports, Israel's prime minister says it shows Hamas wants to destroy the Jewish state and has no intention of compromising.
Mashal's visit this weekend to the Gaza Strip, his first ever, seems to have hardened positions on both sides. Mashal told a cheering crowd that Hamas will, quote, never give up one inch of the land of Palestine. After Mashal's speech, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the speech shows that the Palestinians have no intention of compromising with Israel and are intent on the state's destruction. Netanyahu has come under harsh criticism over the past week for announcing a wave of Jewish settlement building in the West Bank. He told his cabinet Sunday that Israel will never withdraw unilaterally from the West Bank as it did from Gaza. For NPR News, I'm Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem.
The European Union picks up its Nobel Peace Prize tomorrow amid ongoing controversy. Critics, including some EU members, say the bloc doesn't deserve the award. But Terry Schultz reports from Brussels, EU leaders and the Nobel Committee are defending the choice.
Hundreds of demonstrators marched in downtown Oslo tonight, protesting the Nobel Committee's award to the EU for uniting Europe after both world wars. Human rights groups argue the EU shouldn't get a peace prize because of its high military spending and that it's an undemocratic organization because its leaders aren't elected. The European Commission President, José Manuel Barroso, argues the prize committee was right to recognize the bloc's historic achievements.
For the people and for the institutions that day after day for the last 60 years have built a new Europe.
But that new Europe still has deep divisions. Though the heads of all EU countries were invited to the Oslo ceremony, several are staying away in disapproval of the win. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
This is NPR. Philippine officials say the number of people missing after last week's typhoon has jumped to 900, more than 300 of them fishermen who were at sea. Typhoon Bopha slammed the southern island of Mindanao Tuesday. Meteorologists were concerned it would hit the Philippines again after it made a U-turn yesterday, but the storm is now dissipating. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez is flying to Cuba today for another surgery to remove a cancerous tumor that's afflicted him since last year. NPR's Juan Ferrero reports Chavez informed the Venezuelan public about his medical condition in a televised address last night.
The president's supporters gathered in public parks and churches to pray for El Comandante, the populist leader who's ruled Venezuela for the last 14 years. Chavez, who is 58, has been battling cancer since June of last year, but just months ago, he said he'd been cured after a third surgery and chemotherapy and radiation treatments. But in a surprise address, the president told his countrymen that malignant cells were discovered in the same problematic area, his pelvic region, and he said it was absolutely necessary to return to Havana. The gravity of the situation was made clear after Chavez named his vice president, Nicolas Maduro, as his successor should his health force him from office. Juan Ferrero, NPR News.
Former South African President Nelson Mandela is spending a second day in a hospital in Pretoria. The 94-year-old is undergoing unspecified medical tests. South African President Jacob Zuma reportedly visited Mandela today but gave no further information. Yesterday, Zuma said Mandela was receiving treatment consistent for his age. I'm Barbara Klein, NPR News in Washington.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Also, we have a chat room open. You can join the chat room out there. You can ask questions, send your comments, anything along those lines. You got topics you want us to talk about. You can also tweet us on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. That's TailorMade101. Or you can tweet Jima, and that's at AskJima. That's AskJema. I want to talk a little bit about the fiscal cliff. Jima, we are into the second week of December here coming up here shortly. And last week was pretty much just a bunch of theater, posturing, if you will. Now it seems to me that President Obama and Boehner has been having these sidebar conversations over the phone or in person or any over Skype, texting each other, whatever they're doing, but they're beginning to communicate. So my question to you is, Jima, do you think that Boehner is trying to extend the president an offer to get him to budge on taxes? Or is it the case that they're coming close to a deal and he's calling the president to ask him what can he get in, basically?
Well, I think at this point, him calling the president trying to figure out what he can get in is crazy and straight ludicrous to me, because you used that card already. You already used your ace in the hole the last negotiations. You don't have that ace anymore. And the fact that you've been obstructing the president for anything he's been trying to do for the last 18 months, he doesn't have another card. And I don't think the president ought to try to meet him anywhere. He needs to meet where the president is. And the president has made it real clear where he stands. He's made it real clear, I'm not raising taxes on the middle class. Say what you want to. This has nothing to do with anybody making $250,000 or less. This is all about people making more than $250,000. And let's say you make $251,000. The first $250,000 still ain't gonna get no tax increase. It's just the one. So it's just the $1,000 you gonna see a tax increase on. And so I think John Boehner painted himself in the corner. He wanna come out and talk about who had a mandate, who didn't. Yeah, y'all regained the House, control of the House, but barely. And you lost some seats that you didn't think you was going to lose. So don't act like you in any real bargaining position, because you're not.
That's my opinion.
I don't think they're in any real bargaining position. They got people like, and I like MSNBC, but I'm not feeling Chris Matthews right now. I ain't feel David Gregory in a minute. I think Luke Russert does his father's shame on a daily basis, as does Thomas Roberts. I mean, I could go on and on and on with all the people on there. Do you think I don't know if they're drinking the same Kool-Aid over at Fox News or what, but let's tell the story, but tell the truth. Let's not act like the president needs to move. The president don't need to do nothing. This is what he ran on. This is what the people voted for. He's had the largest margin of victory ever.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get the largest margin of victory, you get to walk around with your chest out. And that's just how it works. Because if it was on the other foot, if Mitt Romney had won and he was going to be sworn in next month, you can best believe the Republicans would be up on Capitol Hill acting like they own the world. And that's what I want the Democrats to do. Start acting like you own the world.
Well, I must admit that President Obama is a very, very strong, humble president. He has a lot of soft power, and I think that works to his favor in a lot of cases. Huffington Post is reporting that President Obama and House Speaker John Boehner met today at the White House to discuss the ongoing negotiations over the impending fiscal cliff, the first meeting between just the two leaders since the election day. Spokesmen for both Obama and Boehner said that they agreed to not release details of the conversation, but emphasize that the lines of communication remain open. The meeting comes as the White House and Congress tried to break an impasse over finding a way to stop a combination of automatic tax increases and spending cuts scheduled to kick in at the beginning of the year. You know, it's interesting to me is that whenever the Democrats are in a better position, if you will, most of the talks are secretive or nothing comes out. But when the Republicans have the upper hand, if you will, boy, they come out pounding their chest, tap dance and turning cartwheels, everything that you can imagine, high siding, as we used to call back in the day, about their. But I must admit, if you know, Democrats historically has not done that. I don't think President Obama is going to do that. At the end of the day, he's not going to posture. He's not going to. But he is standing firm on the fact that he really believes, because he's in a win-win position. If the Republicans don't act, everybody taxes goes up, and then he gets what he wants anyway.
Right. Well, the thing about it, though, is that it's, the president doesn't have to walk around. That's what he got Nancy Pelosi for. And Nancy Pelosi ain't backing down none of them. She don't care. She's going straight out and say what's right. She comes straight out and say what's not going to happen because she knows her caucus. She knows her caucus very well, and they have yet to forgive her for how she pulled off the health care. They've been trying to undermine her ever since. But you're talking about a woman that knows who she's working with. When Nancy Pelosi will get on TV and say, "Oh, it's not. We don't have to worry about it." I'm listening to Nancy Pelosi. I'm not listening to the pundits. I'm not listening to half of these other elected officials because they be lying. But I have to say, when she makes a statement, and even Senator Reid, when Harry Reid makes a statement, when he finally says something, that means it's going to happen. And that's just what I stand on. So, I'm all for negotiating, but I don't really know what kind of power the Republicans have to be negotiating. Usually when you're negotiating, you got something to offer. What you offering? I'm telling you, big taxes are going to go up, period. There's nowhere, we ain't talking about entitlements right now. We're not talking about Social Security. We're not talking about none of this other stuff y'all trying to add to. We're not talking about the debt ceiling. We are talking about increasing taxes on those people that earn more than $250,000 a year. That's what I'm talking about. If you don't want to talk about that, we don't have no talk about. We ain't going to have no secret meeting. We ain't going to have no cold meeting. You ain't got to fly me no note under the door. I've drawn my line in the sand, and I mean that.
Now, you mentioned Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. When they say something, they pretty much you can pretty much guarantee it. Well, what about the other side of the fence? This week, Mitch McConnell, of course, put in a bill and then end up what they call filibustering his own bill. Now, if you haven't heard this, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell wanted to prove on Thursday that Democrats didn't have the votes to weaken Congress' authority on the debt limit. Instead, they called his bluff, and he ended up filibustering his own bill. The legislation, modeled on a proposal McConnell offered last year as a last-choice option to avert a U.S. debt default, would permit the president to unilaterally lift the debt ceiling unless Congress muster a two-thirds majority to stop him. President Obama has championed the idea. And so when it was time to deliver the votes, McConnell ended up filibustering his own bill. What is going on with that?
Lunacy. That's it. I mean, there's no sense in trying to explain crazy people. That's just lunacy. There's no reason for it, except that all of a sudden now it was something the president agreed with, and I cannot ever under any circumstances be in agreement with this president, so I will filibuster my own bill that I brought forward to the Senate stating the exact same thing that the president said, although now since he's standing and agreeing with it, I can't say it no more. Who does that?
No, we cannot
people. Crazy people do that. Not overstate
what happened. And you really nailed it when you said that there's nothing that the president does, even if it's my opinion, that I'm going to agree with. This is simply what we're dealing with a Congress that does not want America to succeed because we have a Barack Hussein Obama X in the White House.
That's right.
And it's unfortunate he had to put in, but there's so much evidence to suggest that this is how they want to play the game because it's Obama in the White House, that it's sad to see that we, the American people, the electorate, the constituency of the Congress, is having to endure all of this ludicrous behavior because a couple people do not agree with the president and his superior positions on most of the legislative issues that come up in our society, that they would hold the American people hostage to something like this. It is sad to see this happen over and over and over again. It was very obvious when he came out and said it, you know, years ago, our single number one thing is to stop President Obama from getting a second term. They failed. They failed in a lot of ways. Now he has the upper hand when it comes to this fiscal cliff, and I think they're going to fail again. What do you think?
They didn't just fail. They got their books spanked. I mean, they got a good old-fashioned knocked out moment, as in Friday with Debo. That's what happened to them. They got knocked out, as in Pacquiao's fight last night. They just got knocked out, and they are having, they stumbling trying to stand up. They disoriented. They reaching for the rope, and their gloves won't grab on because they are totally disoriented. They don't have a clue as to where they are. They like, did this really happen? It's almost like Groundhog Day to them. It's like deja vu over again because, see, they got beat last time with McCain, right? They got smoked this time. You know, it's like watching, what's his name, Usain Bolt from Jamaica run. He smokes everybody. I don't care how fast you are not faster than him. And that's what happened. They got smoked. And they are having the most difficult time understanding how did this black man do it again. You know, one time is a fluke. Twice. And then the second time around to have a better ground game than he did the first, how do you do that? How do you have a better game the second time than you did the first time? And they are still sitting in their smoke-filled rooms trying to answer that question, and they can't come up with one. And so now these same people, and some of these people are going to be up for re-election in 2 years. See, John Boehner may have gotten off this time, nobody ran against him being ran unopposed. I doubt that's going to happen in 2014. I guarantee you, the Democrats right now, he's from Ohio. I think the Democrats right now is looking for somebody in Ohio to run against John Boehner in his district. I guarantee you, I put that on everything I love, that he will not run unopposed come 2014. If he runs, because, you know, they'll quit on you in a minute and go run some foundation. If they don't want to get beat, they'll rather quit than get beat.
Yeah. So you talked about a knockout, and you talked about the Jamaicans and how they run fast, and I want to equate that to that four horseman race of the relay, the 100-meter relay. And I want to shift now to President Obama handing the baton to a Hillary Clinton for 20. Will that continue to be a knockout blow? If President Obama hands the baton to Hillary Clinton?
Well, here's the thing. You know, I'm trying to find my words to say this as delicately as I possibly can. Hillary is not going to take the baton from the president because that would mean she would need him for something. So it's not going to go down like everybody thinks it's going to go down. It's going to be one of those ninth hour decisions where she decides to run, where it's so far removed from him that she'll feel like it's on her own merit that she's going to run and win. I don't know if you get what I'm trying to say, but, you know, just like they tried to make the turn in the election be about what Bill Clinton said at the Democratic Convention, and those of us with any sense was like, no, not really. I mean, he was good, but he didn't win this election for the president. Let's be real clear about that. So just like, and the president, you know, never said yay or nay to none of the stuff people were saying, neither did his team of people. That's a group of disciplined people. But I know behind closed doors, they was like, hell to the no, we're not going to give Bill Clinton that much, you know, credit that he had anything to do with whatever. Hillary Clinton, because of who she is, will not just accept the endorsement from the president with such grace because she doesn't know how to be gracious.
I'm going to challenge you on that. I want to say that Al Gore learned from his presidency or his failed attempt at trying to gain the presidency when he did include Bill Clinton in his campaign. And it's really about these pockets of constituents, right? You know, Hillary Clinton is going to sew up the woman's vote. I mean, without question, right? And then you got a fact that President Obama can deliver you the black vote at 100% pretty much, right? And then you got Bill Clinton that can deliver you essentially the white vote, the white male vote, a percentage of Democratic white votes, right? So when you break the numbers down in that way, it is very likely if she runs, she's going to need a President Obama to be able to deliver those constituents. And now when she gets in the White House, it may be a different ballgame, right? You know, we have amnesia when we go out and we have these victories. But for the most part, I think it's essential if she tries to run to make sure she includes this. I want you to take a listen at what Newt Gingrich had to say about Hillary Clinton running. Out of all people, Newt Gingrich. And then I want to get you to respond. Take a listen.
I mean, if their competitor in 16 is going to be Hillary Clinton, supported by Bill Clinton and presumably a still relatively popular President Barack Obama, trying to win that will be truly the Super Bowl. And the Republican Party today is incapable of competing at that level.
He said incapable of competing at that level. How far off is he?
Well, I mean, he's not far off at all because, we know, as we stated earlier, the Republican Party is in complete disarray right now. They don't really know who that's the only thing they think they know is who their base is, but that's about it. They haven't decided any way of how they're going to build alliances with any other group. They ostracize their own party members in terms of even leadership, people of color in leadership. They've had things to say about Michael Steele. They basically bowed him out anyway. I mean, it was under his leadership that they regained the House, and then they kicked him out and brought in crazy man Rance Priebus, who is a nut to the highest level of nuttiness. And then, you know, you have, you know, J.C. Watts, who, for, you know, his issues, you know, probably could do the party some good, but they're not trying to listen to him. But the thing I have to caution about is that, yes, you know, Hillary Clinton is name recognized, Bill Clinton name recognized, but Hillary will have to go into those places and build those relationships. She's not going to be able to just go in there on Obama's name. She's going to have to go in and build some relationships, and that's what I think she's going to struggle with. She's going to have to lose her airness about her, and she's going to have to meet people at the table and talk to people, not at and or around them. And she's going to really have to work hard. I don't think it's going to be a gimme because people, you know, we remember what happened in 08. She said some pretty harsh things, and let's be real clear. A lot of us did not want him to pick her for his vice president, and we're pretty happy that he didn't because that just would have been too much power right there. Let her figure out herself and find herself away from the White House, and that's what he's done. Now, I think the problem that happened with Al Gore was that I don't think if Joe Biden decides to run, which I can't see Joe Biden running because he's, like, real old and he's going somewhere and sit down. I don't, you know, what Al Gore did was political suicide and that he did not ingratiate himself into President Clinton, although it could have helped him. I mean, but, you know, he's guilty of the same, you know, thing that Tyrone and Mitt Romney are guilty of. He didn't carry his home state either. So if you can't carry your home state, then it's pretty clear that you really are not favored very well. So I think that Hillary, as I stated, will have to build those bridges herself and maybe be introduced in those circles by the president, but she has to go in there and do the work. I mean, it's just like when you talk about, you know, affirmative action. And people always talk about people get hired on because of they black or they female or they this or they that. That very well may be the case, but I still got to go in and do the work. You might hire me because you got to meet your quota, but that ain't going to stop you from firing me if I ain't doing my job. So she might get in and have the inside track because of her last name and because of her perceived relationship with President Obama, but she's got to go in and do the work. And she's got to go in and do the work not only with us here in the field, because she got to repair some bridges that she, you know, burnt down during her primary bid against the president. So she's going to have to do some work. It's not going to just come that easy, you know. And you know, eventually we'll support her, but she's going to come in and show us something. She just can't walk in and say, hey, I'm here. You're going to do some work.
Now, what do you think about this idea that I mentioned several months ago about the 24 years of prosperity, meaning 8 years of an Obama presidency, 8 years of a Clinton presidency, Hillary that is, and then followed by the opportunity for the first Hispanic president? What do you think about that?
I mean, I still think it's all probable. I mean, it all really goes with how these next 2 years work for the president, because he's got to get a lot done in 2 years before he becomes a lame duck president. So he has to really come in and really leave it on a strong, solid foundation. But the problem with that, Clinton was on a strong, solid foundation, and then they still elected, well, actually didn't elect George Bush. He stole that one, but still. You know, you still got to have the right candidate. Nobody's just going to, you know, walk up to you and say, you're the president. So even if Obama does all that we know he's highly capable of doing, whoever the next candidate is, let's say it is Hillary, she has to run a campaign. She has to run for president. It's just not going to be given to her. She will have to earn it as everyone else has. And then possibly, and she may not even do two terms. She might just do one because, you know, they don't treat older women the same way they treat older men. So they may try to tell her it's time for her to go somewhere and sit down, much like Luke Russert did to Speaker Nancy Pelosi when he basically asked her, wasn't it time for some new blood in terms of and women in positions to take over in the House? And she said, well, that's not a question you'd ever ask a man. And it's not. Okay. So, you know, therein lies the problem. And so Hillary will have to really, she have to have a strong first term if she would be around for two terms. But I get your point, though. I think it would be time by that time for sure, because they'd definitely be in the major majority at that juncture.
But
if the trend lines continue.
Yeah, exactly. Not to mention if you're talking about the place that we came from a Republican to a Democratic president, the health care law would be in full effect by that time and implementation. We've obviously, the trend line suggests that the unemployment rate is dropping. You know, at that point, these corporate institutions will begin to loosen their purse strings to start hiring more. Which is going to, you know, if we're pretty much at 7.7% now, and they're still sitting on all this capital, when they start hiring again, it's going to, you know, even take it even lower. So people are going to make that connection to a Democratic president with prosperity, because they're going to have first Clinton, Bush, everything went downhill, Obama, everything started to come back up, and then if you have a Clinton or another Democratic president comes into place, they can see those trend lines. And, you know, again, going back to that 24 years of prosperity, 8 years under President Obama, 8 years and another Democratic president, and then 8 years for this potential Hispanic president to come and be a part, I think is a great possibility. And in the event that Hillary Clinton runs, it is more likely than not if she doesn't.
I don't know. I ain't really on the Hillary bandwagon just yet. I need the president to be go through his second inauguration, and I really don't want to get too much hype about 2016. I kind of want to enjoy 2012 because it was historic. It was monumental. It was against all odds, as the song says. And people came out and voted for a man and a vision that they felt would move America forward. And so I want to relish this for a moment. I really don't want to talk about Hillary. I mean, I know everybody's trying to, you know, go to 2016, but I really don't want to talk about Hillary. I want Hillary to figure out what happened in Benghazi. That's what I want Hillary to do while she out doing all she's doing. I need, before you walk out the office, I need a commission report or something that you authorize so you can tell us what happened. That's what I need from the Secretary of State.
Forward. Let's talk about moving the country forward with respect to this thing called marijuana. Now, many people are confused about the legality of medical access to marijuana. Now, the passages of state initiative in recent years has intensified the confusion. First and foremost, marijuana for any use is illegal under federal law. Marijuana for any use is illegal under federal law. Even if you live in a state that has enacted legislation or passed a ballot initiative that recognizes marijuana, medical utility, you are subject to arrest by federal officials for possession or cultivation. Secondly, it is illegal to ship or receive marijuana by mail. Do not be fooled by individuals who claim they can legally ship marijuana because they live in a state where marijuana is legal. Interstate shipment of marijuana is a federal offense. So, marijuana. So, having said that, if you reside in a state that has enacted a ballot initiative for legalizing medical access to marijuana, it is important that you check with an attorney or a local official about your policy. Now, having said all of that, Jimmy, what do you think the country is moving with respect to marijuana for medical use and for, I'm going to say, for just for leisurely use?
Recreational use.
There you go.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, there hasn't been a study, to my knowledge, that shows that marijuana, as they told us for all these years, was the gateway drug, and that it was a drug that led to other things. Because I know people that's all they've ever done is smoke weed, and they ain't never done nothing else. They don't want to do nothing else.
But they ain't doing nothing.
Right. But they ain't doing nothing else either. So I think we're at a point where people are a little bit more aware because of the internet, because of the 24-hour news cycle, and because of your ability to look up something on your own instantly and not wait till the 5 o'clock news to find out something. You can actually go and find it right there and you can read it for yourself. And so I think because of technology, people are like, well, wait a minute. So that's not necessarily true. And so when you start to research and you're finding this out yourself, when you're starting to research and you're looking at something that very well may have had some validity maybe 25, 30, 40 years ago, you're looking at it now 40 years later and it doesn't carry the same amount of weight. And so you're dealing with a younger population as well that may be a little bit more experimental and things, and so they're trying out different things. I'd rather people smoke weed, and don't misunderstand what I'm going to say. I'd rather them smoke weed that we know where it comes from than this made-up stuff people be making up in their kitchens, because you don't know what's in that. Mm-hmm. You know what's in weed. You know how to grow weed. Anything you're not growing, mm-hmm, and you just manufacturing it in mass doses, much like our food, much like our prescription drugs, mm-hmm, you know, it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you don't have nobody holding up a restaurant because they high on weed, they high on something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even alcohol. You have people, you know, drunk off their rocker shooting up places and driving crazy. You ain't never seen nobody have a wreck because they was high. Because most of the time they're not driving nowhere, first of all. You know, and if you're smoking and you ain't driving at a high rate of speed, I don't know. I ain't never been high and driving, so I don't know. You might be riding real fast. But the probability of all the things that we were told about marijuana is beginning to be dispelled. And I think that's why people's ideas about it is taking a little bit more of a liberal turn as opposed to a conservative turn. Because it's just like, that's just like the boogeyman under the bed type thing all of a sudden. And so people are just doing their own research, I think, and finding it to not to be, you know, and those people that are going to get high are going to get high anyway, whether it's legal or illegal. We know that, because you still have 48 states that is not legal, and it's not like people ain't getting high.
Right.
So, you know.
All right, so.
Go on and tax it like you do alcohol and make some money out. Well, okay.
Okay, so I got a letter from my alumni institution. And it reads this. It says, when Colorado voters in November passed Amendment 64, which legalized small amounts of marijuana for personal use, it led to a number of questions. This is at a university now. So you have to know that the federal dollars are given to universities because of certain things that they must follow. So the letter goes on to say, most uncertainty surrounds the conflict between the new state law and federal law under which marijuana remains illegal. Amendment 64 will be signed into law in January and take effect in January 2014. But for the university, the issue is clear. Marijuana threatens to cost the university nearly $1 billion annually in federal revenue, money we can't ill afford to lose. I was personally opposed to Amendment 64, this is what the chancellor says, and worked on my own time to defeat it. But it passed, and see, the university, like many entities, is working to determine the implications. The glaring practical problem is that they stand to lose significant federal funding. The university must comply with the federal Drug-Free Schools and Community Act, which compels us to ban illicit drugs from campus. Our campus is bringing in more than $800 million in federal research funds, not to mention nearly an additional $100 million in funding for student financial aid. The loss of that funding will have a substantial ripple effect on our students and our state. The university contributes $5.3 billion to Colorado's economy annually, a good portion of it derived from the research. Now, because of this, it says this, and this is where I want to talk to you about. Additionally, we have worked hard to fight the image of the university as a party school, because it was a party school when I went there. That's at least this is what it was taught. It was a great engineering school, too, but it was definitely a party school. While we are not naive about the behavior of some of our students, we know that the party school image is vastly overstated. The publication that promotes such nonsense, such as Playboy and the Princeton Review, use research methodology that would earn them an F in our classroom. Likewise, the 420 event we worked to shut down last year and will continue in coming year paints a picture of the university that is far from accurate. So I want to ask this question. With the nuances that are kind of illustrated in this particular letter that the chancellor wrote to the students and the alumni, do you believe that this is going to have an impact on the behavior of the students on campuses, knowing that it is not illegal to at the state level, but it is legal at the federal level and legal for them, illegal for them to have it on campus? They kind of caught in the middle. Well, how can they conduct themselves under this these circumstances?
Well, let's be clear. We already know people getting high on campus. Right. I mean, it's not like getting married all of a sudden that marijuana is legal that everybody on campus all of a sudden starts smoking. They already smoking. I mean, so I don't know how. I mean, they're gonna make it be an issue, but it's not, because people are already on campus smoking. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that just drives me insane, because as they said during the presidential campaign, this is a solution looking for a problem. There's no problem here. The issue is how much you gonna have on you, where you at when you smoking it, and if you get caught, and if the police officer decides to abide by the state law or the federal law. That's the whole issue. 9 times out of 10, I mean, you've already had some of the prosecutors up in Washington State decide they're not even gonna prosecute. They throwing out all these cases even before the law. They said, we're not even gonna, this is just gonna bog down our court system. We can save some money by not even charging these people and not even taking them through the court system. We're just going to dismiss all these cases. So it really becomes, you know, an issue in terms of what does the legal system really want to do? They want to be bogged down trying to have a state law and then a federal law, and who's going to be in charge of enforcing it when we have real crime going on? That's all right. I'm at. You know, we got real stuff happening. We got people walking around you know, with guns shooting up classrooms. I think that's who you need to be looking for. You don't need to be looking for Pookie and Peyton and Bryce, who, you know, out there doing what they're doing. We don't need to be looking for them. We need to be looking for the student that is mad at everybody and don't nobody know why, and all of a sudden he ain't been in class in a month. That's who you need to go be looking for. So I think, you know, we just have to, you know, understand the bond that the college is in, but the college, you know, their kids on campus are already getting hot.
So, I mean, this is basically...
And a lot of times, and here's the other thing, though. A lot of times, students can have an infraction that is against the college rule, and the college can determine whether or not they will involve outside law enforcement. So if they never involve outside law enforcement, then it never goes anywhere past the campus. Mm. And that has happened. I know that on a personal level, not to me personally, yes. But I know that on a personal level that and it was around weed in the dorm. And the campus security, the campus police was there and did what they did, but they never said anything to the city police. And so the student was just, you know, suspended from campus or whatever, but he never got a charge.
Mm-hmm.
So there's ways around it, trust me. And you can best believe there's a think tank on every college campus in the state of Colorado and in the state of Washington that is figuring out how they're going to manage that.
And I think this is kind of a CYA for the chancellor to say, hey, look, I sent out a policy. I wrote a policy. I sent out an email to everybody. I posted on our wall to say, hey, look, this is wrong. But I don't think it's an enforcement issue. It's how much dollars am I going to throw at something that's not having an impact, a negative impact on our students or anything that they're doing, right? So I kind of, but it's interesting to see how this has moved from, you know, oh, no, this is the worst thing since sliced bread until now. States are slowly starting to adopt it, you know, slowly but surely. Something happened to alcohol. I mean, it eventually was accepted by all 50 states. And I believe, you know, going forward over the next decade, you're going to see laws ease up on this. Now, I doubt under our first African-American president that he's going to allow this to happen. That will be his legacy that he will be remembered for. But I think,
right,
you know, in years to come after that, I think at the federal level, it will begin to take hold. And we'll see. I mean, if it begins to, how it have impact. And just like the healthcare law, it's not really about the law. It's how people are going to start, you know, making it happen, the implementation of the law. And so that's what's going to be interesting.
Well, I think the same thing can be said in terms of people's mind changing. The same thing about the marriage equality. You know, 10 years ago, who would have thought that, you know, the Supreme Court would be hearing a case on that right now, the Defense of Marriage Act? Who would have thought that you would have states that would have legalized, you know, same-sex marriage? So, you know, things are changing based on people getting their own understanding. And if you were to just, you know, if you take religion out of it and whatever it is you believe in and you take it out of it, you're just talking about two people that want to spend their lives together, you know, why wouldn't you want to support that, since we're supposed to be all about family? So then you add the religious piece back into it, then you still have to say, well, you know, that's between them and whoever God they serve, and then let them deal with it. But who am I to stand in their way? I mean, that's the mindset people have, and they're doing their own research. And as you stated, you know, in another conversation, when you start to figure out things that was the law of the land 100 years ago, and as time goes on, then somebody finds something new, like, well, wait a minute. Well, then that couldn't be true from then. So now we got a new truth. And I think as we evolve as humans, as we evolve as a race of people, we will continue to evolve in our thought process and challenge the status quo and challenge religion and challenge our beliefs and our values and really, you know, make you want to embrace other people and other cultures as opposed to not wanting to embrace. We're real good at separating ourselves. And so I think as we mature as a country, as we mature as a race of people, you know, we'll see a lot of things. We'll look back in our 80s, 40 years from now, and be like, "Ooh, I would have never thought something, whatever that never thought was." Because I'm sure my mother, who's 72, is looking back. I would have never thought we would have had a black president.
That's true.
You know, yeah. So yeah.
So you mentioned the Supreme Court. And just moving this conversation a little bit forward about, you know, how the country has evolved. And so you mentioned the Supreme Court and this they're going to review gay marriage. Let me give a little background about the case for our listeners out there. And then let's have a conversation about that. So quite naturally, the Supreme Court is taking a potentially historic look at same-sex marriage by agreeing to hear two cases that challenge government. Different treatment of gay Americans. The focus in one case in California's constitutional amendment that forbids same-sex marriage. The other case deals with federal law that denies to those who can marry legally the right to obtain federal benefits that are available to heterosexual married couples. Now, Supreme Court cases often take twists and turns that limit the scope of the eventual decision. Now, Jimmy, this Supreme Court has been very, very busy this year. You know, and I can honestly say that over the past couple of decisions, I was a little surprised at the outcome, notably the healthcare decision. And it seems to me that they're going to really take a look at the laws and see how they really apply, as opposed, into my fear initially, as a partisan view. Now, here is my personal partisan view of this issue, and because of that, I'm gonna present my judgment in this manner, right? But it seemed to me that the Supreme Court, you know, over the past couple of cases, has not gone in that direction. They really try to look at the law and try to look at the true benefit, cost-benefit analysis. What do you think is going to happen in this particular instance?
I really don't know, because you really don't know who's for it and who's not, and I think it's going to be, I think Justice Roberts, once again, is really concerned about his legacy. And so he will have to really take a hard look at, you know, what is this going to say about the Supreme Court, in which, you know, I was the Chief Justice on. And taking a look at the states that have voted on these things and how these laws have been, the people have voted. It's not like, you know, these state houses are passing these laws and making these decisions. People are voting on these measures and are making it real clear where they stand. And so how do you just deny the people? So that's going to be, you know, I think the line in the sand that's really going to have to help them determine, you know, the legality of it all. So it's going to be exciting to watch when they come back. You know, it's going to be exciting to watch how all this unfolds.
I mean, the fact that the court has embarked on what this could be the most significant turn involving civil rights in decades. I mean, they looked at issues in racial discrimination. The justices already have agreed to decide cases on affirmative action. They have really been busy this year. And this is probably going to be up there because there's a lot of feelings when it comes to just gay and lesbians in general. I mean, look at how President Obama was treated when he came out and made the statement that he did early this year. I mean, you had people that his strong supporters in the church were just had lost their mind. And so, you know, the same type of feelings when it comes to the Supreme Court, I think will rise up again. And I wonder how you know, gay and lesbian would be treated going forward.
So, yeah, it's gonna be interesting. It's gonna be interesting.
All right, we're coming up on the closing part of the show. Jim, what's your final comments?
Wow, my final comments. You know, I had a conversation with my son at a store yesterday. We were out looking for some Christmas decorations, and he said, "What is Xmas?" And I was like, "Huh?" He was like, "What is Xmas?" And so right there in the middle of Walmart, I'm having this conversation with him about Xmas is what is an abbreviated version for Christmas. And it's not something that we particularly are fond of, those of us that really know and understand the true meaning of Christmas. we want to keep Christ in Christmas and not out of Christmas. And he was like, now, mind you, my son is six. And he was like, yeah, because Christ is why we have Christmas, right? And I was like, yes, Christ is why we have Christmas. So I would just say to the listening audience to remember the reason for the season and to understand that it's not about the giving of gifts. It is about the gift of life that was given to us, those that do believe. And so Christmas is a special time of year, as are all the other holidays that come up for many different faiths. But for me, Christmas is a very special time of year because of the birth in which we celebrate the birth of Jesus and why this time of year seems to be so festive. And so just to remember in the eyes of a six-year-old that Christ is why we celebrate Christmas. So let's not, you know, take it out of Christmas because that's why we celebrate it. So that would be my final thoughts. And children sometimes have a way of reminding you in their innocence and questions to really challenge you sometimes or even remind you of your own beliefs and why you believe in certain things. And there were several people walking past me in the store probably trying to figure out why was I having this conversation right there. But, you know, when a kid, I'm a firm believer, when a kid asks you a question and you can answer it, you answer it right where they ask you because they're going to remember that. And so that's what I would say as we're nearing, going towards the end and getting close to Christmas. Let's not drive ourselves crazy trying to buy stuff we can't afford for people we don't even like. So I just say, you know, spend your time wisely because that is the one thing you cannot ever get back is your time. And to let those around you know that you love them. This is going to be a difficult time for me and my family. As you know, we just lost my brother a couple of weeks ago, and it's still real fresh. The wound is real open for me, and I'm sure for my siblings and my mom as well. So just trying to find a peace in all of this is what I'm praying for right now. So and just knowing that, you know, Christ is the reason, and that for those of us that believe, we believe in him and we believe in what he came to this side to do, and that was to save us all from our sins. So that's the world according to what I believe in. And for that, I say thank you for allowing me the opportunity to share.
All right, that's our show for today. I'd like to thank all the listeners for tuning in. And of course, a special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent Jima Hill Cook. Now, don't forget to follow her on Twitter, and that's at Ask Jima. That's AskJEMA. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events.
Who says that?
Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and follow my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. You're listening to the sounds of George Spencer and Sweet Dreams.